without a dream in my heart, without a love of my own. Blue moon, you saw me standing.
Welcome back. This is Mark Steiner, and we are about to have a conversation with Chita Parsi, who we have been looking forward to talking to. He's one of he's president of the National Iranian American Council and one of our leading thinkers on the issue of Iran in this country, author of A Single Roll of the Dice, Obama's Diplomacy with Iran. And Chita, welcome. Good to have you with us.
Thank you so much for having me.
And you can join us here at 410-319-8888. Write to us here, steinershow@gmail.com. Tweet at Mark Steiner, or you can just log on to our Facebook pages. And Chita, this is such a complex subject about the deal that the West just cut with Iran and what it did and didn't do. Because it's not as grandiose as we think, but also at the same time, it is groundbreaking.
I certainly would say that it is groundbreaking, mindful of the difficulty that the two sides have had in striking even a minimal deal, mindful of the tremendous amount of animosity, distrust, baggage that the two sides have with each other. So when there is a breakthrough, even as it is in this case, just an interim deal, that still is a huge breakthrough. And I think precisely because the issue between them is so severe, has such a long history and such bad memories, it's probably unrealistic to expect that they could have struck a bigger deal at this moment, but rather they essentially were forced to strike an interim deal now in order to be able to create the space for a bigger deal down the road.
Well, some people are arguing there's a couple of things. One is that this deal didn't really include a long-term agreement on the question of enrichment of nuclear fuel and the like, and so that it lends itself open either to opportunity, but also lends itself to questioning just how far this will go. Is this just kind of a way to put things on hold for a while so they don't boil over? Do you know what I'm saying? That what about that critique?
First of all, I think some of that critique is based on an extremely unrealistic notion that it is possible to push back the Iranians towards having no enrichment at all. In fact, the reason why there is a deal is because there is an agreement that at the end of this deal, under the right circumstances, Iran will continue to have enrichment. If that was not granted to the Iranians would not have given an inch. And we have lost so much time and so much opportunity, and we have given the Iranians so much space to be able to expand their nuclear program by insisting on this tremendously, completely unrealistic objective of pushing for zero enrichment. Remember, when the Iranians in 2005 offered to cap their nuclear program at no more than 3,000 centrifuges, the Bush administration pushed the Europeans not to accept this deal, because we wanted zero enrichment. 8 years later, the Iranians have 19,000 centrifuges. They have mastered the technology much further. They have enrichment at 20%. They've made so much progress simply because we were shooting for unrealistic objectives and could not take yes for an answer when they actually offered to cap the program. So I think from the perspective of the American negotiators, they realize they could have gotten a better deal 8 years ago than they could get today. And also, they can get a better deal today compared to what they can get 2 years from now. So instead of insisting on unrealistic objectives that may sound politically good in Washington, they went for what is prudent and realistic. And I think they should be congratulated for that.
So one of the things that intrigues me about things, there are a couple of things here. One has to do with what this says about the overall Middle Eastern situation. There's been a lot written ever since this deal was cut about how it will affect our relationship with Saudi Arabia, the moving away from Saudi Arabia, that's a mistake, how it will affect the war in Syria, whether it will help or hinder finding a way to end that civil war that we may not have anyway, and how it affects our relationship with Egypt. What about the reverberations of this for the rest of the Middle East and our policies there?
Yeah. On the contrary, I think this is actually going to be very good for the region, because if you manage to solve U.S.-Iran tensions, then a key force that tends to fuel the conflicts in all of these other arenas will essentially have been eliminated. You have a situation in Syria in which solutions exist, but because of the U.S.-Iran enmity, because of the Iranian-Saudi enmity, it's been difficult to even sit down and talk about those solutions. With the U.S. and Iran managing to resolve this issue, we have opened up the path to be able to talk about other areas, some in which actually there is a lot of common interest. For instance, both the Iranians and the United States have a common interest in defeating al-Qaeda. Al-Qaeda has been targeting Iran extensively. But because of this tension that has existed between the U.S. and Iran, we have not been able to work with the other side in order to defeat al-Qaeda. Now, possibilities for that do open up. The fact that the Saudis are worried is largely because the Saudis are fearful, not that the Iranians will get a nuclear weapon or that the Saudis themselves will buy or build one, but rather because the Saudis are fearful that this will mean that in the eyes of Washington, Saudi Arabia will now be a less important country. That's a concern that is understandable, but that is not a concern that fundamentally changes the nature of the situation in the region, or actually positioning the United States in such a way so that the accusation of abandoning Saudi Arabia would have been true. In fact, I think it will also help make sure that the United States can have a more mature and adult conversation about the Saudis, about their support for al-Qaeda elements, for instance, something that appears to have been difficult for the United States to do as long as we felt dependent on the Saudis.
Now, I want to go to the phones here. And Ernest, we're going to come to your call, but one quick question before I do that. Because I was reading an essay this morning by David Keyes and Ahmad Batebi, in which the essay they were writing about how this was a missed opportunity, that unlike things that happened in the past in the early 70s when the Jackson-Vanik Amendment was pushed, linking most favored nation status to the Soviet Union to improvements in human rights, that this was left out completely. And they write that since Rouhani assumed power, that more than 300 people have been executed. Men, women, Baha'is, trade union leaders, others, and that we've kind of left this hanging in the wind.
I actually tend to agree that not including human rights and other issues on the agenda was not a good thing. But I think what is happening now, though, is that as this nuclear issue is resolved, all of these other issues will now be will be able to be addressed. Both sides decided that they couldn't address any of these issues until they first resolved the nuclear issue. I, again, tend to believe that it would have been better to include those issues, but nevertheless, we're past that. But I think some of this criticism about why wasn't human rights, why wasn't this or that issue included on the agenda, is also coming from people, not necessarily these authors, but it's coming from people who at the outset completely were against diplomacy. So they didn't want to see any diplomacy, and then afterwards they're criticizing and saying, well, why wasn't this issue included? Well, you weren't even in favor of diplomacy. So for you to come afterwards and say that diplomacy didn't address X, Y, and Z issue is a bit peculiar.
Well, so what should be our role in that when it comes to those internal issues?
I think, first of all, I think it's important to understand that this deal at the end of the day is much more than about centrifuges, enrichments, and breakout capabilities. This will help define the direction and the identity of the Iranians for the next coming decade, if it is successful, because it will have positive repercussions on the regional policies, as I mentioned earlier on. It will also have significantly positive repercussions on the internal situation inside of Iran, because if the moderates in Iran can show that actually moderation pays off, not behaving like Ahmadinejad did pays off, then you actually have a situation in which the human rights situation and other things that the moderates in Iran have been pushing for but unsuccessfully so far, actually can be addressed much more effectively. So I think if this process is permitted to continue, you can see many of the objectives on human rights and other things that we all agree must be achieved, that they can be achieved through this process. But I think it is also important to understand it is extremely unrealistic and frankly unhelpful to believe and to push for an instantaneous solution to all of the problems that exist. That has never, ever, ever, ever happened with any other country. So why do we think that it could happen with Iran, a country that the U.S. has had no relations with for 34 years, has no diplomatic presence in, has no trade with that would provide us with some leverage? We don't have any of that. So as a result, getting positive results is going to take time. It's going to have to be a process. Those who wish to live in a world in which you can snap your fingers and everything will be fixed are better off studying literature and live in the world of Lord of the Rings and things of that nature in order to achieve that. But in reality, in this world that we all live in, those kind of that is simply not possible. And so you're forced to deal with processes and you're forced to be patient.
Let's get a quick call. We only have a couple minutes left in this segment. Let's go to Ernest. You're on the air. Quick thought, Ernest. Welcome.
Yeah. I don't know how quick it is, but
it has to be quick. We only have a minute.
Okay. Well, the reason why we have a problem with Iran is because the CIA in England, the M15, assassinated Mossadegh and put the Shah of Iran into power. That's the reason why. Iran hasn't attacked anybody in 150 years. The thing that's fueling this the most is Zionism. That's the problem. This is why Netanyahu is going all over the world trying to get the United States to go against Iran. Iran has a right to have this.
Okay. Since we have about a minute, let me let Trudeau respond as much as he can to what you just said, which was a lot.
A lot was said. Let me just address the issue, Mossadegh. I think the fact that the U.S. and England made a coup against the democratically elected Prime Minister Mossadegh, they did not assassinate him, but they made a coup against him, definitely set in motion a lot of reactions that unfortunately have led to the current situation. And there's a lot of mistrust between the two sides as a result of this. Most Iranians, of course, know about this episode, and they know that the CIA made this coup against the democratically elected prime minister and reinstated the Shah, who was also a very brutal dictator. Most Americans do not. So as a result, many maybe ended up in a belief that this is some sort of a very recent conflict. But unfortunately, it does have deeper roots.
It does. And I think the question of Israel's response to this and the role of all that we'll maybe tackle another day. So I think it's a really interesting part of this equation and of Middle Eastern policy in general and where this Israeli government is going, both internally and externally. But I want to thank you for joining us here, Trita Parsi. It's always great to have you with us. Thank you. We look forward to having you back soon. President of the National Iranian American Council and author of A Single Roll of the Dice, Obama's Diplomacy with Iran. Trita, thanks so much. Talk soon.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. Thank you.
We're going to take a very brief break. Come back with our weekly show, Soundbites. We're going out with Boys to Men. This is the anniversary of their knocking themselves off in 1994, number one on the Billboard. When On Bended Knees started a 6-week run number one thing, I'll Make Love to You. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
And I know I just need one more chance to prove my right.